Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters' Roundtable tonight, and we're talking about some of the top stories of the week. My guests are Jennifer Thomas, CNN News producer and assistant professor at the Harvard University Department of Media, Journalism, and Film, political analyst Justin Duckham, and Hamil Harris of The Washington Post. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michelle, calling from Northeast D.C. Michelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was listening to the caller earlier when you were speaking about the situation on medical records and schools losing funding for, you know, that being one of the main deals and the other for mishandling things. Mm-hmm. And it just goes into play what a lot of Donald Trump is saying, because white America is sitting on the outside looking at us and saying, you know, why are they giving such excuses? And then they think of us in one matter and magnitude of maybe how they can help or put a Band-Aid on our situation. So we as a people, as parents, I was cringing my teeth when you asked the young lady, well, didn't you know about it? I have four boys.
Mm-hmm.
When I register them each year for school, I already have set up on my computer a complete list of the requirements, and I scanned in the documents and the doctors and the physicians and things of that nature. So it will never be lost.
Mm-hmm.
I have a copy. The school has a copy. And both children go to the doctor at least twice a year, at least, or maybe once. So there's no excuse for a parent not to have these records or to be aware and to make it their business to be aware when they're, you know, putting their children into these schools. So, you know, I see why, ignorantly, Donald Trump is speaking on that level, because he thinks that we're in dire straits and we need so much help. We need to help ourselves and be accountable. And that's my two cents.
And thank you, Michelle. And suffice it to say, I wasn't blaming the parent, but I do believe that
I understand.
You're right, that Michelle was making, you know, a very good point. Yes, school systems should remind parents in any language, be it Spanish or English or whatever. But also, parents should be responsible for the health and welfare of their child. So I would venture to say that this is a joint effort. But, Michelle, thank you so much for sharing. 202-319-781.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go right ahead.
We keep talking about parents, this and parents that, and I'm a parent.
Mm-hmm.
But when is accountability coming for these people who get elected year after year after year? Donald Trump gets firewood because of our inaction. And they talk, and you know, the thing that people don't say is that, you know, we talk about Black Lives Matter, and if you've had this discussion, but then they kill each other. So do we devalue ourselves or give them free talking points? And again, it's a shame that this conservative rhetoric is out there. But again, it gives fuel to this conservative fire of self-accountability. And just like now, this is another talking point for the Republicans, because they said, well, Prince George's County is affluent, it's full of Democrats, and they can't even do Head Start right. These are talking points that we give them fodder for.
Well, let me ask Justin about that, because when, you know, even in some of the comments that Donald Trump has made, okay, he was saying, you know, he wants to create an America where you don't walk down the street and you get shot. Well, yeah, when you talk about the totality of the African-American community, that would be a no. But if you live in some parts of the South Side of Chicago, if you live in some parts of Baltimore, for example, and some of the other more challenged communities, that is a reality. So is it what he said or how he said it?
Well, he's somebody who has a habit of cherry-picking reality, mm-hmm, in order to achieve the most disastrous, apocalypse-like result in order to talk about it, to run against it, to resort back to his Make America Great Again message. And this is something that he's been doing a lot, in particular with his new outreach. There's this new idea.
Hold on. Go right ahead. Please.
No, there's this new idea that he has wherein he's trying to push out that there is a 55.8% youth unemployment among the Black community, which just isn't true. This is a number that he brought in by including students, by people who are at college. And as a result, you know, he's able to form something that, you know, may be accurate in the flimsiest of terms, but is just not an accurate representation of people's day-to-day lives.
I think that's a problem, too. If you're a presidential candidate and you are speaking on falsehoods, That's a problem. And then not only that, but if you say that if you're afraid to walk down the street for fear of being shot and he's going to help you, how? That's the question. How?
Well, he said earlier this week that the problem is that there aren't enough police officers in the African-American community. His words, not mine, which I find hard to understand. I'm not sure I understand that explanation, because he did not, as is often the case, drill down a little bit with that point. So I'd be curious to hear how that would make black communities or any community that much safer. Something I would imagine would be interesting to ask him if he were to come to a black organization and speak.
Pontification again without policy.
Let me just make this point. The Republican primary, we had 16 candidates who could not work together as a team to coalesce behind senators and governors, all these people, and that produced Donald Trump. So now we're trying to rationalize this and say, well, because their whole strategy was, let's just go against Hillary. Hillary's a liar. Hillary's unelectable. But guess what? Now the focus is, well, what will you do, President Trump? He doesn't have a plan because he's so focused on what Hillary is a liar. And the thing about it, he's still polling 40 to 45% across the country, and he still could win. Okay, so again, you really wonder, will substance ever come back?
Well, and I want to talk about Hillary Clinton in just a bit also, because she has her own set of problems. But first, let me go to Wee calling from Maryland. Wee, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Wee, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Yes, you know, presidents in the United States since the early 1900s historically are selected. That process has not changed. And to think that because you have perhaps a Hillary Clinton or a Donald Trump in office is going to make a significant difference is not the case. What I will say, though, about Donald Trump is how he has exposed the hypocrisy and the deception of a political system that has not been favorable to any people. So to think that Arthur Miller wrote an interesting book, it was called The Secret Constitution and the Need for Constitutional Change, and he pointed out a couple of things. He said, he says our vice president and presidential candidates are pre-selected. And
let me say this. Even if what you suggest, even if what you say is true, what has happened with the Trump campaign would suggest that that is no longer the case, because a year ago, as Hamill pointed out, there were 17 GOP presidential candidates and everyone was laughing at Donald Trump. And here we are. And so, yes, if indeed these candidates are selected, the voters, no one else selected Donald Trump. Let us move forward, because I do want to talk about some of the other issues. If you're on the line, please, I promise I'll get to your point. But we can't forget about Hillary Clinton. This latest revelation coming out of her State Department emails about the relationship, apparent close relationship between Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State and the Clinton Foundation, that has got to cause her a great deal of pain. And we could even argue that for the very first time this week, we heard Hillary Clinton say something that we've heard Donald Trump say this entire campaign. She pushed back against the venerable Associated Press. And we have not seen her push back and say, you know, that the press is, you know, reporting incorrectly. And, you know, does that suggest, Justin, that her campaign may be in high defense mode?
I mean, they certainly are in high defense mode, and for good reason. And in particular with the Associated Press report, there's a good reason for it to be that way. You know, this was a report that wasn't really as groundbreaking as they certainly tried to make it out to be. Essentially, what it showed was Clinton aides responding exactly as you would expect Clinton aides to respond in a situation wherein they would advise, you know, her to, you know, either go through official channels or whatnot, or to pass the buck on to somebody else. And, you know, both of these revelations that we've seen in terms of the emails just haven't produced a smoking gun. And that's the caveat that continues to come up time and time again, that there is no evidence that she actually exchanged cash for favors, which is what Donald Trump continues to insist on, which is what the right wing, you know, blogosphere continues to insist on. And at this point, it's a little interesting that that just has not come up, especially because that just kind of goes against the historical nature of the Clintons. I'm not going to pretend she's a saint, but in the White House, you know, for the Clinton era, I talked to a number of high level donors back then. Their way of doing things was they would actually, you know, grant a favor first and then accept campaign money down the road, or, you know, would move forward more for their own personal ambitions rather than enriching themselves. You know, the Clinton Foundation was not created to be a criminal enterprise, as Trump insists. It was pretty transparently a way for Bill Clinton to try to get a Nobel Peace Prize. So this is just a no, it was. I mean, honestly, like, let's say, you know, why else would he be in Haiti? He wanted the Nobel Prize. So, yeah, I think this is just a misunderstanding of the Clintons, a just really odd misreading of them, and something that, you know, probably just isn't producing what a lot of people are expecting.
But Jennifer, this is so messy, and you could argue that this is the way politics is done, but now we're seeing it, if that is the argument, and it just and it could not come at a worse time for the Clinton campaign.
Well, I think to me the timing is more than ironic, because it's coming at a perfect time for those who don't want her to be president of the United States. But I think part of the problem with the AP's report, from what some critics are saying, is its whole framing of how it plays together and pieced together the article. And I think as journalists, you have to do your complete due diligence to any report, especially an investigative report. And so that's been a lot of the controversy now after that report came out by the Associated Press, who's held in high esteem, is how the article itself was framed. And as you said earlier, and as you said, Justin, there has been no wrongdoing that has come from any of this. There's been no wrongdoing that's been found from her emails. And so many on her campaign, from what I've some of what I've read today, are that she's going to keep her eyes on the prize and keep it moving. And hopefully it'll lead her right to the White House in November. We'll see what happens.
Go right ahead, Hamil.
You know, I just came from Bill and Hillary National Airport, taking my daughter back to school in Arkansas, and I spent time in Little Rock, and I talked to people, ordinary people, not political pundits, and what was amazing to me of how they don't like Hillary Clinton in Arkansas, and I know they're based in a red state, but people keep talking about this is all about the Clintons making money and using their political office that they've done for, and I'm just a journalist, okay? But you hear the same thing. The question becomes, will the American people buy this story and say, okay, we're going to still support Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump? It's not about going to court. It's about going to the polls. And I think that the Clintons have a problem. To what degree, we don't know. But I do think it's something that's going to be an issue as opposed to turnout. Turnout is the key thing.
Yeah. Real quick, Justin, before I take a break, and by the way, Casey and Anika, please do not hang up. We're going to catch up with you after the break. But quickly, Justin, quick comment.
It's a two-person race between a candidate who has spent their entire life in politics and one who is essentially a noob, a new person, a newcomer. And in this situation, you know, Hillary Clinton is basically performing politics as usual. That is how she got to where she is today. And this is essentially a, you know, punishment for her experience, which frankly is not fair considering that there have been, you know, this kind of behavior for years.
Indeed. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk to Casey in Temple Hills and Anika calling from Waldorf. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Anika calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hey, go right ahead, Anika.
Hi. I wanted to make two points. The first is this is a presidential election.
No matter who you're going for, you can't afford to sit this one out. Everybody has to get to the polls and vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the second point is, as far as PG County, I want to call on every parent and guardian that has a child or knows of a child in the system. It's a voting year. Vote everyone in out. Vote them out. They're not doing what you need them to do. Get them out of there.
Well, you know, suffice it to say, Anika, the school board, for example, is a hybrid, and that the vice chair and the chair were appointed by the county executive, Rusher and Baker. There are those on the school board that voted in, and even though there has been some turmoil because some have been replaced because of some misdeeds and the like, but that does not discount your point. Yes, you should vote in Prince George's County or wherever you happen to live, but also be aware of how the system works, who you can and who you can't vote for, and who is not eligible. So, Anika, thank you so much for that public service announcement. We appreciate you. Let's go back to the phone lines. Casey, calling from Temple Hills, Maryland. Casey, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I still wanted to talk about Prince George's County.
Help
and
yourself.
The issue with the vaccines. I'm a millennial, and I attended both Prince George's County, Montgomery County, and D.C. public schools,
mm-hmm.
and Prince George's County is the only school district that is not sending out notices of what is required. And I do understand the thought process that parents are supposed to know, but every other month there seems to come out with a new vaccination that's necessary. I mean, I don't consider chickenpox to be deadly, so how would a parent have to know that their child needs the chickenpox vaccination unless the school district lets them know? Or how am I supposed to know if the Zika virus, all of a sudden they have a vaccination and it's required unless the school district sends out a letter?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't agree with that I'm supposed to be, because I'm a parent, I'm supposed to be a doctor now and supposed to know what is required in the United States.
But let me say this, and obviously you are an educated consumer of public education in this D.C. metro. There is something called the Internet, and every school system has a exhaustive description of what you may need depending on where you live, whether it's Montgomery County or Prince George's County or the District of Columbia. And if for some reason you don't have access to, you know, the Internet, which, and even in 2016, that is an issue for some households, you can pick up the phone if your child's health and welfare is important and ask, because you just suggested, Casey, how am I supposed to know whether or not Zika or chicken pox or smallpox or scurvy or whatever, you know, whatever the issue may happen to be. I would just say that, yes, again, it is the responsibility of the school system to let you know what your child may need, whether it's medical or educational or transportational. But I think that parents also need to be active and to make sure that they have all of that information. But again, that's just my thought about that. Casey, thank you so much, and I appreciate your phone call. We have a few moments, and I want to make sure that we take a little time to talk about the passing of George Curry. George Curry was an incredible and amazing journalist of many, many talents, and he passed away Saturday night of heart failure at the age of 69 years old. He was a friend of this program. I said this just a few days ago when I wrote a little, "We Thought You Should Know," about George Curry. Every time that our wonderful producer Candace Atkins called George and said, "George, we need you for the Reporters Roundtable," George came in and he sat right here. And I was always amazed at his depth and breadth of knowledge. And I was familiar with who he was, but I really didn't have an opportunity to know him until he came in here and shared his intellect with us. And we are heartbroken at his sudden passing. And Hamil, I know that you are familiar with
George. Harold, I lost a brother, and George would stay on me about stuff. I remember when George came in, Candace called George, and I said, and he came in. I had to be there because he would say, "Why you so busy? You can't come into the studio." And George was a journalist, and he also was my editor. We worked for Emerge magazine, and I remember I was still nervous of George because he says, "You know what? He wanted to fire me so many times. He said, "You know why, Emil? Don't give the Washington Post your best and give the Black Press your second," because he came from the Chicago Tribune, the Tribune, and he knew how to be in the Black Press, the Majority Press, and everybody's press. But then he had a soft heart for the Black community, and it hurt. It really, I can't think about life without George. Because I needed to talk to him about something now. And I keep thinking about, I need to call George, and I can't call my brother.
He also had an office at one time in the School of Communications, and we literally just saw him at the Democratic National Convention. We had a group of students with Howard University News Service, and he was sitting with us during the DNC one night, and it was funny because I was sitting right next to him, and we were watching one of the speeches, and he quickly interrupted to tell us to be quiet so he could hear. But he was there, and he was always there for the students, and was just a very powerful figure. And I know definitely here at Howard, we all miss him and think about him as well.
And I don't know, Justin, if you are familiar with George Curry at all.
Not deeply, but particularly after his passing, a lot of my colleagues and friends within the, Black press were writing quite a few accolades about him. So I looked into it a little bit. And, I was particularly touched by a speech he gave, I think, about a year or two ago, wherein he made the argument that he is proud of his profession, but not what it's doing right now in terms of being a journalist. And I think that really spoke volumes about the need to have these sort of giant moral voices who really speak to all people.
Hamil, tell us something that we did not know about George.
Well, I think one thing, I don't know if you remember, George was an impeccable dresser. Mm-hmm. He was old school, and he took a lot of pride. I remember when he went to Africa, South Africa, he took a lot of pride about that. But he was a particular person that knew details. He was a ferocious editor. He knew more than you knew, and you knew you knew it. And so, but then, at the moment where you just thought that you were just, I felt like nothing in front of him. But then he would have that soft voice, and oh, it's okay. He'll crack a joke. You know what I mean? But I remember we used to do Lead Story with BET years ago, and I would be intimidated because you had George there. Yeah, Aaron Gordon, and those brothers were clean from their toes to their haircuts. For me, and that's why I went out and got me some new shoes, because I could see George in the middle. Where do you think you're going looking like that? You know, writing was just part of it. He was a whole package. And I think that's the thing that we lose now. It's not good enough that you can talk proper with the Harvard. You got to look the part. And that's what he was about.
You know, one of the things that I did not know, and this came out when he was here, and I happened to be off on that particular day, but he was here talking about the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali. And George started out at Sports Illustrated. I didn't realize that he was, a sports reporter. And, for a lot of people out there, particularly, your students, especially the guys, they say, yeah, I want to be a sports reporter because they think that stuff is easy. But reporting is reporting, and it doesn't matter whether it's sports or politics or even, lifestyle or entertainment. And I was amazed re-listening to that broadcast in June after the passing of Muhammad Ali. And he knew so much about Muhammad Ali his 1960s gold medal in the Olympics and the transition from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali and his involvement with Elijah Muhammad, the Nation of Islam, as well as Malcolm X. And it just really blew my mind at how much George knew. And of course, we cannot forget about Emerge magazine. And it's my understanding that George was even as recently as last week that he was still trying to bring Emerge back online.
That's what we're talking about. We were talking about that. But, you know, you can draw a line from George. I don't know if it was Alabama, Mississippi. I forgot what southern state he came from.
He's Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
That's right. But yeah. You can draw a line from Interstate 65, mm-hmm. from field to factory. He was a product of those who left, the sons of sharecroppers who left Alabama, who went to the big city like Chicago, who, you know, like the Nation of Israel. And it was about dressing. It was about representation. It was about passion. You know, the Chicago Defender, you know, the Tribune. So, again, you can draw that line from the deep south going up north and to represent your people. And that's what he stood for.
And I have to say that on this program, he was not only a man of great intellect, but he made you laugh. As I heard this week, he was unapologetically black. He supported black institutions. He was certainly a gentleman, a great journalist, syndicated writer. Let me not forget that piece. We are going to miss George Curry a great deal. And it's my understanding that he is going back home. Back home to Alabama after 69 years. We're going to miss him. I want to thank Jennifer Thomas, Justin Duckham, and Hamil Harris. Thank you all so much for participating in this program, and I'm looking forward to having you on the program again real soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, August 24th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel